Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you? You see, I can't ask you how people dress to weddings in Israel because there literally anything goes.
Well, people usually keep a pair of wedding jeans that they wear when they go to weddings.
Yeah, that's a nutty. That is Israel. I remember once, walking into an environment and I was wearing like nice pants and a shirt and somebody said, "Have you got a funeral today?"
Of course.
And well, I don't even think funerals are formal.
Dress in Israel in general is quite laissez-faire, I would say. And people are quite surprised at the work dress because a lot of people come to work in jeans and T-shirts, and that seems to be quite common. And even in the high-tech industry, people could wear shorts and sandals in the summer to work quite happily. But I think that Israel is one of the only countries in the world where official diplomatic dress in the summer. So there's a note that goes out from the Israeli Foreign Ministry to the diplomat saying that official diplomatic dress over the summer months is open neck shirt without jackets. Because obviously the weather doesn't really support suits and ties. Very uncomfortable indeed in this hot weather. And in general, I think Israelis like to dress for comfort rather than to be, you know, dressed up too smartly. Although, you know, different areas of society have different dress codes. You certainly do see people dressing up quite smartly. It seems to be the exception rather than the rule, though.
Yeah, I think it's time to bring back the safari suit, but that's just me. Iran yesterday formally and publicly violated the nuclear deal entered into with the P5+1 countries in 2015. What's been the reaction, if any, to the violation?
Well, this is quite an amusing story all in all, because the Iranian news agency formally announced that Iran had gone over the limit that was set by the nuclear agreement back in 2015, where the nuclear agreement said that Iran would not stockpile enriched uranium exceeding 300 kilograms. That was the limit that was set by the agreement. And the Iranian news agency yesterday said that Iranian stockpile of enriched uranium now formally exceeds 300 kilograms. And in fact, even the International Atomic Energy Agency has agreed with that. So there seems to be little doubt in anybody's minds at all that the agreement has been formally exceeded in terms of what was agreed back in 2015. The status of this agreement, therefore, is completely thrown into doubt. Not only has the United States rejected the agreement, but now the Iranians are formally announcing that they are rejecting, in inverted commas, rejecting the agreement, because even though they haven't stepped away from the agreement, but they're making a very, very plain statement that they are not adhering to the terms of the agreement. And so I think that this now throws the ball very firmly in the court of the Europeans, who have already said that they are not going to respond to anything that doesn't come from the International Atomic Energy Agency. Well, we've already heard them say formally that Iran has exceeded the 300 kilogram limit. So the question is, what do the Europeans do now? And the joke, of course, is that in May, Iran set the 60-day ultimatum, which ends on July the 16th, I think, middle of July sometime, for the remaining members of this nuclear agreement to fulfill their commitments in terms of bank and oil commitments to Iran that were set out under the agreement. So even though Iran is formally exceeding the limit that was set down in their agreement, and therefore formally going over the effectively pushing the agreement to one side, Iran still expects the Europeans to adhere to their side of the agreement, which I think is a little bit of a farce. You'll pardon the pun, because of course it's the FAST news agency that's reporting all of this. You know, this really throws things into doubt. It was interesting that President Trump said that as far as he's concerned, Iran has been violating this agreement already before the agreement was even signed. That was a tweet that came it was an announcement from the White House, which responded to by the Iranian foreign minister to say, really, as if though he is He is in the right here, whereas Trump, of course, is in the wrong. So Donald Trump says, as far as the American administration is concerned, the violations have been happening already even before the agreement was signed. And interestingly, Prime Minister Netanyahu said that there is more proof of Iran's nuclear lies still to come out. So, of course, he's referring to the event back last year when Israel exposed the details of Iran's nuclear archives when all of that, all of those documents were stolen from under the noses of the Iranian regime and presented to the world. And according to what Netanyahu is saying, there is still more to come out. So I think that this story is one that's going to run for some time. But it's just a kind of a joke that, you know, while the Iranians are clearly violating the agreement, they're still expecting the Europeans to adhere to it. I think that now this really makes all the European parties look relatively weak, because what they should really be doing is they should be responding to the situation with this violation, which they're not doing at the moment. So we will be waiting to see what they're going to do next.
Really, really interesting. What is fascinating is I just wonder, you know, even given the fact that Iran was very clear, well, we don't really know if they were in violation. We know that they had this program. Whether they were active during the time of the agreement, well, we'll still have to see. But I just wonder if anyone actually cares. There's almost like Iran gets this massive pass at all sorts of things, and it kind of leads on to the next story, because more information has now been made public about the attack on Syria, attack in Syria last Sunday night, and from what I understand, this is also about Iran.
Well, we spoke very briefly yesterday about the fact that there were reports of attacks that were carried out on Syrian soil from the air on Sunday night, and that people were killed. The latest reports that I've seen are that at least 15 people were actually killed, and there were reports of civilian casualties, including possibly an infant or a baby who were killed. Large-scale airstrikes in the areas of Damascus and in Homs. Interestingly, there was an anti-aircraft missile that was fired by the Syrian regime, which actually landed in Cyprus. So that's an interesting one. It landed just north of Nicosia in the Turkish area of Cyprus. This was apparently an S-200 Russian anti-aircraft missile that had been shot in order to try to defend Syria against this attack from the air, and it happened to land in Cyprus. Fortunately, there were no casualties in Cyprus, but that would have been an interesting development if that had landed in some sort of a residential area in Cyprus, and what the reaction would have been there. But be that as it may, this was clearly a very significant attack against Syria and against an Iranian base that has been established in Syria. As we understand it, a number of particular targets were attacked near Homs and near Damascus, including a scientific research institute, an arms depot that apparently belonged to Hezbollah near to the Syrian-Lebanese border, an airbase south of Homs that was apparently being used by Iran and Hezbollah. So these were very, very targeted attacks, very specific against targets that were obviously identified well in advance. And they were very, very significant. And I think that this just shows that, you know, with the best will in the world, and even with the Russian S-200 anti-missile system and the S-300 anti-missile system that has been deployed in Syria, they have absolutely no answer to the air power of what we believe to be the Israeli Air Force. That obviously hasn't been confirmed, is an unlikely to be confirmed. And in fact, in recent days, we had some research information coming out from Israeli intelligence suggesting that more than just one S-300 air defense system has been deployed in Syria. So apparently there are quite a number of these Russian air defense systems, the S-300, which is the most developed one that the Russians have to offer, that have been deployed on Syrian soil. And in spite of that, it seems as if the Israeli Air Force is able to attack against those targets almost at will, in order to do what's needed in order to make sure that Iran doesn't build up a significant base in that southern Syrian area, particularly near to the Israeli border. And indeed, Hezbollah is not allowed to get shipments of arms in order to build up bases around that area as well. So obviously Israeli intelligence is working very hard, and I would suggest that it's the Israeli Air Force that's also working pretty hard in order to keep things as quiet as possible, in order to preempt possible strikes from Syrian and Lebanese soil, rather than to wait until the bases have been built up and the infrastructure has been built up, and then having to defend against any attacks that might come from there.
Crazy situation. And in fact, I read an article in one of the British tabloids how some holidaymakers in Cyprus were petrified by this missile. And I thought,
yeah,
well, no,
this
is
something
like
that you would normally
on
holiday. Something that you'd normally see in Cyprus on the beach.
No,
is it?
I wouldn't have thought. And in fact, I just thought, okay, British tabloid. I can't, you know, it's probably something we can ignore. But clearly, there was truth to that story. And finally, there been protests. We've been talking about this. There's been protests across Israel after an Ethiopian teenager was shot dead by an off-duty policeman on Sunday. Give us a bit more context here.
So the actual incident took place in the Krayot area near to Haifa on Sunday night, when Solomon Taka, a 19-year-old, was actually shot dead by an off-duty policeman who was walking in the area with his family, and who claims that he felt threatened. He apparently got involved in trying to break up a street brawl that was taking place in the area where he was with his family. And in the quotes that have been made public from his lawyer, the off-duty policeman claims that he felt threatened by what was going on there. There was one report where I saw that he suggested that there were some stones, some rocks thrown towards his area where he was with his family, and he felt threatened, and therefore he decided to take out his weapon and use it. The latest, most recent report that I've heard this morning says that after having investigated how the bullet actually pierced the body of Solomon Taka, it would appear as if though the bullet might have bounced off the ground and then into his chest, because the policeman claimed that he shot at the ground rather than shooting at anybody in particular. And the initial scientific investigation seemed to support that point of view, that he actually shot down rather than shooting at somebody. So, you know, that investigation will continue. But I think that it doesn't hide away the ongoing problem that we have in Israel with regard to the Ethiopian youth and the Ethiopian community in general. And it's a very, very unfortunate situation, because amongst all of the immigrants to Israel over the years that have come from different parts of the world, I think it's the Ethiopians who've really had the hardest job to settle in and to acclimatize to Israeli society. Their overall family structures have been broken down completely. The way that they live their lives in Israel is entirely different from the way that things were done in Ethiopia. And as a result of that, unfortunately, the whole breakdown of the family structure has contributed towards crime and has contributed towards negative behavior coming up, particularly from the Ethiopian youth. And of course, accusations that the police are overzealous, that the police are targeting specifically Ethiopian youth because they come with some sort of a name to begin with, or some sort of a reputation of being troublemakers. And in fact, to some degree, that view was borne out by the Palmore Committee that was established in 2016 and published its report into prejudice and discrimination against the Israeli-Ethiopian community following protests that took place in 2015. And that report found that indeed the police do disproportionately target Israeli Ethiopians, with far higher levels of arrests and indictments and incarcerations than any other population sector relative to the size of their population in Israel. So this is a very, very unfortunate situation which arises from the breakdown of the family structure and from the breakdown of the lifestyle that the Ethiopian community were living, and has led to the very, very unfortunate situation and the death of this individual, Solomon Taka, this boy, the night before last. And there are some pleasing trends, though, that we see, that there have been far fewer arrests in recent years, in the last year or two, of Ethiopian Israeli minors, declined by 50%, for example, just in a report that was published earlier this year. And for adults as well, a much lower number of arrests have been made. But even so, apparently an Ethiopian minor is still five times more likely to be arrested than any other minor in Israel. And that's a very worrying situation that we find ourselves in.
Indeed, it really, really is. And I certainly hope that the correct attention is going to be paid to this issue and that that this will be brought to the public awareness and that measures can be taken. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always for a very informed